This episode of the Rental Income Podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, where you can easily track your expenses and even email invoices to your tenants. You can get a free 30-day trial. Just go to freshbooks.com/RIP and enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lay.
My guest on the podcast today had incredible timing when he decided to start buying rental properties. He bought three properties at what, looking back on it, was essentially the bottom of the real estate market. So these properties are all cash flowing really well. He was able to pick them up really cheap. And today, those properties provide a good base salary. His income from his regular job is not steady. He has good months and bad months. But the income from the rental properties is steady and really kind of covers his basic living expenses. So we're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come back in 30 seconds and we will meet Graham Stephan from Los Angeles.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Graham, welcome to the podcast. Why don't we start with you telling us what got you first interested in real estate?
A lot of it, I think, was just a fluke. I did so terrible in high school that I didn't really have the grades to go into college. I mean, I didn't really get in. I only applied to one school that I thought I'd get in, and I didn't get in. And then I was left with like, oh, no, what do I do now? And real estate seems like one of those things that I thought – initially, I thought I was just going to do it for a year and then reapply to schools. And I ended up getting my real estate license just as I was graduating high school. And I ended up falling into it and really enjoying it. And I think about 8 months, 9 months in, I sold my first house, and that was $3.6 million. And that commission was just like more money than I had ever seen in my life. Sure. That I had ever had. I mean, that was just like, it was like winning the lottery for me. And then after that commission, I'm like, there's no way I could go back to school. Let me give this another year. And I think I sold my next home a few months after that. And at that point, I'm like, you know what? There's no way I can go back to school after this. This is so much fun. Right. I'm really enjoying this. And I really saw it as just a future career that I loved. That was just so much fun for me.
That's awesome. And then how did you go from being an agent to being an investor? How did that part come about?
A lot of it was just the uneasiness of having such an inconsistent income, because I would have months that I would work and I would grind, and I would work, you know, sometimes 6-7 days a week, 10, 12 hours or more a day, and earn nothing. And then 4 months later of earning nothing and grinding it out and working every day and just being stressed out, you close one deal, and that one deal pays for the last 4 months plus like the next three. And then you don't know when the next deal is going to be coming about, and it's so inconsistent. And a lot of that uneasiness, I just yearned for some sort of stable income in addition to that, even though I loved real estate and I love the challenges. And I like the inconsistency because it makes it exciting. But there was just the stress behind it of needing to constantly hustle for, you know, commission and needing to constantly work for, you know, for some sort of income. So a lot of that, I saved pretty much everything I made. I saved it because in the back of my mind, I'm like, this could hypothetically be my last commission that I'm going to make for I don't know how long.
Right.
So I need to save it. I need to make it last. And after about 3.5, almost 4 years of just like saving, as much as I could. And I think I pretty much lived like a hermit crab. Like I never went out. I would rarely spend money. I think like me treating myself was buying like a Subway, like a $5 foot long. Like that was my idea, treating myself. So I saved as much as I could. And in 2011, I just noticed properties were just so cheap. And I had saved up enough at that point to be able to get in the real estate investing game. And part of that was luck, that the market had turned down enough that it got to a point where I could finally afford a property of my own. Mm-hmm. And that's how I started to get into it. And I just saw that as a way for me to get some consistent income that would allow me to focus on, you know, my real estate agent career without the, you know, the stress and the hassles of having to produce an income every single month.
And that's really the great thing with rental income is it's so consistent every month that those rent checks just show up. And it's great that you've got kind of that base salary almost to cover your expenses so that if you have a slow month at your real estate job, at least, you know, you've got your bills paid.
So that's totally awesome. And that's the way I see it.
That's great. So tell me about your first deal. So how did you find that first property?
So what I did a few months prior to getting my first property, there's an area in San Bernardino that I really liked. And I would just go there every single weekend and just like drive around getting to know the area. And because I was an agent, I had a program set up from the MLS. It was like this auto notify program that sent me listings as soon as they would come on the market. So anytime a listing came on the market, anytime there was a price reduction, anytime there was a listing canceled, extended, withdrawn, anything was done to a property, I would get an email from it instantaneously. So I would look at these listings at the second they would come up. And because I was an agent and I would have templates to write offers on, I would pretty much write an offer on almost anything that came up that looked decent. And a lot of these, because they were short sales, I had to make offers sight unseen. Mm-hmm. So sometimes what I would do, I'd drive by. But other times, I would just write an offer subject to interior inspection. And I would just write offers at prices that I thought it would make sense. Because there were so many of them available at the time, I mean, there were hundreds of short sales. Everything was a short sale because there's so much of them. I would just lowball pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, I mean, they wouldn't pan out. But because there were so many of them, I knew that if I lost this offer, it didn't matter because there are three others that are going to come on the market later today that I can try. So the first one came on the market. This is a property, by the way, that I think in 2005, 2006, the current owner had refinanced the house for over like $300,000. And so they had a loan against this for like 300 and something grand. And the house came on the market, I think, at like $80,000 as a short sale. And even that was cheap. So I made an offer, I think, at $60,000 cash. And these were all short sales.
Yeah.
So because they're short sales, I knew that it was going to take time for the bank to approve these things. So my rationalization was that I'm just going to submit an offer on everything I can, get it accepted, get it sent to the bank, and then the bank was going to take 3 months to 12 months to review that and then come back. And anytime the bank comes back, then you have another chance to decide if you want to accept it or deny it. And by that time, they probably have already buyers lined up anyway. Mm-hmm. So my thinking was that it doesn't hurt to get these offers accepted. And if the bank comes back and agrees to it, great. They come back at a higher price. I'll just evaluate where that deal stands and compare it to, you know, everything else that I have and decide at that point if I want to get this place. So it ended up getting accepted at $60,000 by the seller. And then a few months went by and the bank actually ended up accepting this offer. So at that point, I saw the house for the first time, and it was a mess. She was a hoarder. I think, you know, there were needles around the house. So obviously, she had, you know, been dealing with a lot of demons in, you know, in this. And I mean, the house is just in terrible condition. And then fixing it up, I think my remodeling costs were like $12,000 on this house. Today, it would probably have been around like 20, but because everything was so cheap back then, I think it was like $12,000. And I ended up, I think I rented that house initially for like $1,250 a month.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah. And I was in it like 72, I believe, somewhere around 72 total.
Was it hard to find contractors? Because this house, it sounds like it was an hour or so away from where you were living. Was it hard to find contractors in that area?
Oh, not at all. The thing with back then is that contractors were out of work. I mean, there were so many contractors and so many workers that just had nothing because nobody was remodeling homes. Everything was just sitting there becoming dilapidated. The owners were just letting them go. They had no financial incentive to fix anything up. So a lot of these people were out of work, and getting someone to go over there was, I got someone within like a day of calling around.
Awesome.
And I ended up finding somebody who had worked with one of my clients, and he was so desperate for work, and he had the whole team. and all of his people that were just desperate for work that had nothing to do. So this worked out great because I was able to get such a good price because all these people were just desperate for any sort of work. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was able to provide them with something to do. So, I mean, it really worked out for everybody in this one.
Now, what about managing the rehab? Did you have to go over there a lot to check on them, or did they just kind of do the work and tell you they were done?
You know what? I mean, these sort of people would have just done the work and would have just called me. I went over, I think, every few days, but that's just because of my own curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And just because I wanted to be involved and I wanted to see what was going on. It was new and exciting for me.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to become a part of that process. I didn't need to be there, but
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
Sure. So, all right. So you got that property done, that cash flow, it's cash flowing just incredibly. Now, how long did you wait before you bought your second place?
The next one was just like a few weeks after that. But the thing is this, is that I submitted probably 40 or 50 different offers on places. Like anything that would come up, I'd pretty much write a lowball offer. So at the time, I had a queue of like, I don't know, maybe like 10 different places that I had in escrow at the time. And there's no way I would have closed on all 10. But I knew that I would just see what comes up at the time and then decide at that time if it's a worthwhile investment. So the second property I got was, this is another property just down the street from the first one. And I think this one was worth like probably about the same price. Well, it was slightly bigger, but it was worth probably like $350, $375 just a few years prior. And it came on the market, I think at like $90,000. I wrote an offer at, I think it was $70,000. And we ended up getting an acceptance from the bank at $72,000.
Wow.
So we bought that one at $72,000. It was down the street from the first one. And that closed, I think, maybe like a week or two later.
We'll get right back to our conversation with Graham. I just want to take a quick second to welcome a brand new sponsor to the podcast. It's FreshBooks.com. FreshBooks has just launched an all-new version of their cloud accounting software. It's been totally redesigned from the ground up, and it's really easy to use. A couple of the features that I'm really loving is you can now send invoices to your tenants. I think it's a good idea to send them out maybe a week before rent's due. It's just a good gentle reminder that the rent's coming due. And when they're ready to pay you, they can click on a link and they can pay you directly. So it's super easy for everybody. Another feature that I just love about FreshBooks is their iPhone app. I am just really bad about keeping track of business expenses. It's just really difficult for me to keep track of everything. But I have the iPhone app, and whenever I have a receipt, I just take a picture of it, and it makes claiming expenses a million times easier. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial membership to our listeners. To claim it, just go to FreshBooks.com/RIP and enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's FreshBooks.com/RIP. And enter Rental Income Podcast in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, let's get right back to the interview. Graham, we have a lot of listeners in California and in Los Angeles, and they all tell me that it is impossible to find cash flowing properties. You found some really good deals. Is this just luck? Did you really just happen to buy these properties at a perfect time? Or are these kind of deals out there today?
No, highly doubt. I don't think I could have found another deal like this again.
Okay. Okay.
In my opinion, I mean, this was just a once in a line. I mean, this was partially just luck that I happened to be in the market at the same time these houses had just totally crashed. I don't see. I mean, now these same houses are selling between $2,000 and $350,000.
Okay. Wow. So are you ever tempted to just cash out? I mean, you're sitting on just such a huge gain. Does it ever tempt you to cash out?
Not really. A little bit, because my thinking at this point is that realistically, I think we've somewhat capped out in terms of what San Bernardino can do in terms of appreciation for the next probably 10 to 20 years realistically. Yeah. I think we hit a plateau where we should see some normal gains of maybe 3 to 5% a year. Maybe 5% a year is being a little ambitious. Maybe 3 to 4% a year. Pretty much on par with inflation, maybe plus a percent. part of me does think about cashing out every now and then, but I mean, all of these just cash flow so great.
Yeah,
and it's,
they do.
I don't have to worry about it anymore. So part of me is just thinking, you know what, I'm just going to let it ride.
Yeah.
I don't need the money. I mean, there's no reason for me to sell these, and I enjoy the rental income, so I may as well just kind of keep them.
I think that's a good move. When I talk to a lot of old-time real estate guys that have been doing this for 40 years, that they always tell me that their biggest mistake was selling properties, that they thought they were selling at a nice profit, but over time those properties appreciated more. So I think you can never go wrong holding.
So, and that's the thing too. A lot of the most successful people I've seen never sell.
Right.
And
right.
That it kind of stuck with me. I'm thinking like, why sell this?
Yeah.
And I just can keep it forever and just pretend like, you know, it never existed in the first place.
Right.
And just continue on buying more.
Now, what about management? You seem like you're busy with your real estate business and you live kind of far away. Do you manage these properties yourself or do you have someone local that's helping you out?
I do a little bit of both. So I manage all of these myself for the most part, but I do have someone local that I pay hourly. And he's just been amazing. He is also another property owner. He's pretty much retired. But he's a property owner and a contractor that they pay hourly. So if something breaks, he's local and he can go there and take care of it himself. So I pay him hourly. And if anything breaks, I just tell the tenants to call him directly. He goes out, he'll take a look at it. He calls me basically just for approval if anything breaks, if just prices and stuff like that. But I mean, it's worth it. I don't know if I would want to go and like call contractors myself and line everything up.
Yeah.
But having someone like that just on call that I can pay hourly just to oversee things is worth it.
Absolutely. All right. So let's get back to your portfolio here. So after you bought that second property, you ended up buying another property.
Yes. Yeah, so the triplex was one that I think this one in 2005 or 2000, like it seems like all of these properties that I ended up buying were refinanced in 2005 and 2006. So I think people there just saw their property increase. They saw they could pull out a ton of cash. So I think everybody at that point just pulled out all the cash.
Yeah.
And blew it, all, you know,
yeah.
Essentially just kind of spent it all.
Right.
So this is something I think in 2005, 2006, he refinanced this for like 500 grand or something.
Wow.
Like that. Something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And this came on the market, I think at like 150, 150 grand. And I think I submitted an offer. This is, you know, 5 years ago, so I don't remember the specifics. I think it was around like 110.
Okay.
Well, no, it was 105 grand is what I submitted my offer at, 105 grand. And it took maybe 8 months for the bank to get back on this one. And the bank came back at 125 and did the inspections on it, came back with, you know, some pretty significant repairs that had need to be made in one of the kitchens. Bank wouldn't budge. And the bank was saying, "It's listen, 125, take it or leave it. Otherwise, we're going to list it as an REO and, you know, you're out." And I remember at the time thinking 125 was too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at the time, this place is worth like 110. And at the time, I'm like, I'm overpaying for this by 15 grand. But I thought I'm in so deep on this one. This is still pretty much on par with all the other ones that may or may not get accepted that I currently have in queue. May as well just overpay on this one. And I mean, I had no idea the market would have gone up as much as it did, but now it's probably worth, you know, 350 or so.
Incredible.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So then did the market then start shifting where the short sales started going away and it became harder to find these deals?
Yeah. So what I noticed is that the market just got too cheap for people to really start passing them up. And really investors were the ones that saved those markets.
Mm-hmm.
And that investors were coming in cash, they were buying all of these foreclosures, and they were fixing them up. And it really changed the area around, because you can drive down and see these houses just boarded up. The grass was, you know, 2 feet tall. And you would see these investors go in and clean them up and make them nice and turn them into rentals. And
mm-hmm.
the rental market back then was super strong, because all of these people were losing their homes.
Yeah.
And nobody had the money to buy. And especially because there were so many investors out there buying cash and all these foreclosures. I mean, just banks wanted cash deals.
Right.
So anybody who really wanted to buy, especially in those areas, most of the people didn't have cash to be able to buy those homes. So they were forced to rent. And the rental market then, I mean, just everyone was renting. Nobody was buying in those areas besides just investors.
Wow, that's incredible. That Graham, this is just an incredible story. I'm so happy for you that you've been able to build this incredible portfolio. Congratulations. I mean, this is really, really inspiring. Tell us what you're doing today. So if someone wants to reach out to you, if they're interested in buying properties in LA, what's the best way for someone to get in touch with you?
Right now I have a business email set up. Really the market I work in Los Angeles is very specific. I really don't do much under like 700 grand. And most of what I do is really between the 1 to 5 million range.
Okay.
But I have an email account set up. If anyone wants to reach out, it's grahamstephanbusiness@gmail.com. It's just my full name and then business@gmail.com. And that's probably the best way to reach me if they're interested in doing something like that. Or working with me in something. And really, I just focus on West LA for the most part.
And the other thing that you're doing that I think is really cool is you have a YouTube channel where you talk about a lot of real estate stuff. Tell us about your channel and where we can find it.
Yeah, if you type in just my name without a space, Graham Stephan, my full name, just no space on that, in YouTube, you'll be able to find it. And it's really just a place for me to just share my thoughts and vent and share things that I think are cool with a mixture between real estate and, you know, money and wealth and finance and all that sort of stuff. It's basically a place for me just to nerd out, you know, and record things that I'm interested in and put them up. And I'm just happy other people enjoy it.
I will go ahead and put a link to your YouTube channel and to your email. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode115. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back with a brand new interview next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.